and welcome to
Killing It
on Broadway. I'm Jennifer Simard.
And I'm Jessica Vosk, and this is the podcast where we discuss all things guts, gore, murder, and mayhem.
It's not safe for work. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jennifer.
And hi, John Edward.
Hi, John Edward.
Hi, guys.
Hi, John. Look at your fire. How lovely.
Little backdrop there. Yeah, it's a real fire.
Some of us have real fireplaces. We are not one of them. Oh, well. So nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well.
Oh, my gosh. We are so honored.
This is cool. I'm a fan of both of you. So this is cool for me.
Oh, my gosh. Do you have Zoom fatigue like the rest of America?
You know, I literally live in front of this computer. This is my home.
I know.
I used to be on a plane traveling, and this is it now.
Yeah. Well, rest assured that while we can see you, this is just going to be an audio recording. So no one's going to see your beautiful fireplace, sadly. Y'all should see this. It's really nice.
But you've described it lovely.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. There were children toasting marshmallows in the background. I'm lying. I'm a liar. But, this is a safe place.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Jessica, I have a question right off the bat, unless you want to go first. Okay. So, John, and forgive me, please correct me on my language. You know, I'm such a Luddite in this field. But when did you first suspect that you had this gift of yours?
So I was about 15 years old when my mom and my grandma used to always have psychics come to the house. So I used to, I was the person who used to pull apart everybody's readings and make fun of everybody that came out after having a reading. My dad was a New York City police officer, career military guy, not a fan of the subject matter. I wasn't allowed to until I was like, you know, older. My mom and dad divorced. I moved into my grandma's house. That was like paranormal hub. But I used to do all the pulling apart of the readings and make fun of people. Like when they would come out of the back room, I'd say, wait, let me guess. You're going to Florida. And they'd be like, yes, how did you know? I'm like, because you live in New York and everybody goes to Florida. So like I was that person. And then there was a woman from New Jersey. It's a very long story, but the short part of it is she came to do a group at my grandmother's house. And I decided that I was going to be the person to prove to the rest of my family that this woman wasn't real. And she changed my life. She literally changed my life. She did a reading for me and basically put me on this path and took herself so seriously. I don't know if you've ever been in that position, but as a kid, I remember it really, really well where, you know, I walked into the room with this kind of like cocky sophomore high school attitude, like, you know, let's see what you got type of thing. And she literally dismissed my entire energy. Like, I don't really care what you think, whatever. And she did her thing. And she forced me to take what she was doing seriously. Although I still thought it was not real, she commanded my respect in the moment. She didn't look at me. And then she just proceeded to tell me that, like, I had these highly evolved beings of white and gold light that were ready to work with me. I mean, she sounded batshit crazy. I'm not going to lie. But like everything that she then proceeded to tell me I was going to do, which, by the way, were kind of like off the wall things to hear at 15. Yeah. I did. I wound up doing all of those things that, you know, she told me I was going to do. So that was it. I started off with a reading. Like I had a reading and I went to disprove somebody and that kind of sent me on my path.
So John, which then, I hate to interrupt you, sorry. But I'm from New Jersey. Was it possibly me?
No, nope, okay. It wasn't you. Nope. She's still living and she's in Florida.
Fine. All right.
Because everyone goes to Florida.
Everybody goes to Florida.
My parents went to Florida. That's pretty cool, John. I have to say, I'm as a lover of everything spiritual and paranormal, and as someone who loves to go see healers and mediums, I can imagine how blown your mind must have been when you had your mind blown, you know, by somebody who just sort of said,
yeah,
screw your predisposed ideas of what this is. And I'm going to tell you all these things that are going to come true subsequently in your life. Did it freak you out completely? I mean,
So at the time I was kind of involved with someone and she was involved with somebody else. And my mom didn't know any of the stuff that was like happening. And this woman knew my mom now on a personal level. So she proceeded to go down the path of what was going to happen with that relationship wise. So I was like, I don't know who that is. I didn't really come clean. I was like, I don't know who that is. And then she proceeded to go down the path of what was going to happen. And I found the moment of relief. And the moment of relief was she described what this girl did for a living. And this girl did not do that for a living. And she said that she was going to wind up dating somebody who worked in that other industry. I did not know she was also dating somebody else besides the person that I thought she was dating. And she wound up being with that person for about 5.5 years after that. So that all came out within like 2 weeks. So for me, it was like, that blew my mind more because I had come to a place that, well, maybe she's got some type of like, you know, ability to like read minds, right? So she could like walk around my head and kind of like pick up stuff. It's like, okay, I can go with that. I can go with the whole energy thing. Like she's like a mind reader, mentalist, whatever. But you can't read somebody's mind when the information is not in there. Like it wasn't there. So she got my attention. So when I was done, I kind of felt violated. That's the word I always use because that's what it felt. Somebody like, I don't know, I came home and somebody was in my house and they like went through my stuff. That's what it felt like. And I didn't like the feeling.
Yeah.
So for me, it was more like I felt violated about the experience rather than, oh, I just found out I was like,
wow,
got it. And you said your dad wasn't into this.
Oh no.
So do you still have your dad with you?
No, both parents have passed.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I've lost my mom. I know what that's like. I'm sorry. But did they see the advent of your career?
So my mom did not. My mom did not. And my mom had a phrase for me, which was, you know, you're going to do great things. I know this. And I'd be like, would you stop? And when I was a kid, I used to go into Manhattan where she was like an executive office manager. And, you know, I would sit there and play on her Apple computer and play Space Invaders all day while, you know, she was working. And then she would tell people that came in, that's my son. Remember his face. He's going to be famous. And I remember clear as a bell, like looking at her, like, are you crazy? Like, are you out of your mind? And she's like, I don't know what you're going to do. She goes, but I know it's going to be big. So she would say that when I was 13 and 12. But you know what? Wow. She was a mom. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, of course moms think like that, right? That's, of course you're going to say stuff like that. But
I don't know. My mom, I'm going to say, as a Jersey Italian, my mom was not, John, your mom must have had some kind of inkling because my mom was the one that was like, okay, get into finance, go into finance. So, and while they're happy now, back then it was like, it was not that. So, but I do think on some level, moms know.
Yeah, I think she wanted something. I don't, you know, and then I started doing the readings and she was like a proud stage mom. I mean, legit proud stage mom where she would come to the psychic fairs that I did all through like Long Island. And, you know, she was just like to watch the people's reactions when they walked out of the room reading with me. And I would say to her, like, you know, it's kind of like weird. Like I'm at work and my mom's here. Like, you know, I'm working with people that are in their 40s and their 50s. I go, they don't bring their moms to work. And she's to be like, mind your effing business. I'm enjoying watching my son's progress. And then my mom passed 4 years after I embarked on this journey. So, and that was a pretty powerful fork in the road in a big way for me because I needed now to know that what I was doing was real on a personal level, not just professionally. Mm. Like, you know, it's different. Like when you go out there and you do it for somebody else and you see their reaction and you're like, oh, that's good. I made a difference. But now it was like, no, I need the difference to be for me. Like, I need to know that she's okay. Like, I need to know she's around. It became very, very personal. So it's like the person who's like doing cancer research, being diagnosed with the cancer that they're researching and having to now have firsthand experience at moving through it. But she used to always say to me, if in your lifetime, you can help one person with your ability. And remember, anything that comes with it is all worth it. And it was a missing case that brought me back into this work. Because after my mom was diagnosed in 1989, I became very angry and somewhat hostile, not at people, but at this whole world of energy. Because I thought, how dare they not give me a heads up that my mother had cancer? Oh. Like, how dare they not tell me? You know, like I had binders and I still have them. I have binders of letters, handwritten letters from people saying, oh my God, thank you. You saved my dad's life. You found my mom's cancer. You know, I'm like, so I had that. Ooh. So in the back of my mind, it's like when they tell me my mom had cancer, I went, no, she doesn't. And they were like, what? I'm like, my mom does not have cancer. If my mom had cancer, I would know. It was like one of those kind of things.
I mean, were you angry at yourself at all in that circumstance? I mean, I guess what I mean to say is, were you sort of, did you feel sort of like, how dare I not know or what?
No.
Oh, great.
No, I didn't. Yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't have that feeling. I had an anger at the collective them, you know, like before the pronouns have kind of shifted and changed in the last decade where people, identify as like, you know, they and them and their whatever. I have always used the pronoun of identifying as an us because I felt like it was like me and them, you know, it was like, they give me the information. I'm just the phone. I pass it on. So there's a very clear disconnect. Like I can't do this without them. So without them, I'm really just kind of like teaching metaphysical principle. The actual connections happen through somebody coming through me. So I really feel like I'm just like an iPhone. So I did have an anger towards the them. Mm. Like, why wouldn't they tell me? Like, why wouldn't they show me like that?
I don't know if this is too personal to talk about. You tell me, but have you been able to, I guess, experience connection with your mother since that time?
Yeah, tremendous. Okay. Yeah, tremendous Good. Connection. Yeah, one of the, so let me just, full disclosure, I'm still as skeptical as I was when I was a kid. So I approached my entire community and world in that same looking at things through a lens of, you know, I want to explain it in an analytical kind of way.
I love that.
Yeah, not like, let me throw on my turban and don't question me because I'm the psychic. Yes. You know, that's not who I am. You know what I'm saying? Like I went to the University of Arizona and did testing. Like I always wanted to show the validity to this. So before she passed in my OCD analytical kind of way, sat her down, or I should say I sat down next to her. She was already lying down and came up with three things that I wanted her to come through with when she crossed. And one was easy. Mm-hmm. One was kind of hard. One was off the hook crazy. And I didn't expect her to be able to do it. But I then kind of like gave her different things that she can go for in case the person misses it. And it took 9.5 years for me to get those symbols, but I did get them. And I got them after I released my first book where I said, I'm a professional medium and I still haven't gotten the three things that I asked for. I've gotten other amazing things, but I haven't gotten those things. The book came out. Right. I got all three in like 6 months.
A son's guilt.
Yeah, there's your mom at the book signing. Like, I'll show you signature.
Well, I think I needed to get that book out so that I could teach people that it's not about what we want to hear, but it's what we need to hear.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, and I think that's important for people when they're, you know, like if, you know, Jen, you said you lost your mom, and if there are other people in your family that are, let's say, having dreams of her, right? And you'll have this moment of like, well, that's nice for them. Why am I not dreaming of her? Like, she's my mom. Like, why is she coming to them? So that's a real thing that'll take place where, you know, somebody might go for a reading and then that person doesn't hear from the one that they want to hear from. And then somebody else in their family goes for a reading and that person comes through loud and clear.
This just happened to me. This just happened to me. Yeah.
Yep. It's normal. It's a very real thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a.
I just told Jessica 2 days ago. So go ahead.
No,
Jess.
You go ahead. No, you go. All right. No, this just happened. I lost my aunt earlier this year, and I've always had a very. I feel very oddly connected at all times. Where I've had so many healers say to me before, "You have to work on this gift," and I've been like, "No, I'm too scared. I don't want to." So, but I get visited all the time, and she never visited, and right. And it was a couple of days ago. It was her 6 month passing. I didn't know that, but my mother and I are oddly connected in this way. And she visited us both that evening, but mine was horrible. It was horrible visit. Because
was it a dream?
It was.
So here's what I tell people, Jessica, when people come through to you in a visit, it's not normally horrible. So on some level you might have commandeered her coming through to you, and your grief could have morphed that. And I'll tell you why. When they're sick, mad, angry, disappointed, upset, that's not going to help us. So when they come through angry, mad, sick like that, what that does is it only exacerbates our grief and doesn't help us in the connection part. When they come through in a visit, which is a powerful moment because it's very vivid, vibrant, they look good, they're happy, they're healthy. And they might not say a lot. They just might be there, but you won't forget that 20 years from now, you'll recount that experience. Like it happened like a day.
That happened with my great grandmother.
Yeah. So those are visits, but usually when it's negative, it's us putting a lens over the experience and commandeering it, controlling it and making it sad. Cause that's our relief happens in our dream state where we can kind of acknowledge what we're feeling.
Interesting. That's interesting to know. That's also very fascinating. I could imagine and we'll get back to it, when you said that you sort of were approached with a missing person case. I find that, yeah. I mean, obviously I watch documentaries like they're going out of style. However, it's amazing how many instances you hear where people, families, people who are looking for any answers they always want to say, like, let's bring in a medium. Let's bring in a psychic. I would absolutely do the same thing. Jen, I don't want to stop you from what you were going to say before we get into this. I know you were going to say something.
Oh, well, I definitely want to make this about John, but I was inspired by what you all were saying, that I had just told Jessica that I too am a skeptic. And I also think it's a way to protect my heart, because since my mom passed 6 years ago, of course, what do I want more than anything else other than to experience everything you're saying? So even when I've had these moments, I've definitely been very cautious about my perception of them, right? But just the other day, I was in the vicinity of where she would have been. And I was telling Jessica, this just happened last week. I was putting on makeup and I couldn't find this blush that I absolutely needed. And I mean to say, my wits were about me. I was clear as day. I looked through the bag. I practically dumped the bag. It wasn't in there. And I was putting on makeup for 10 seconds thinking, now I'm going to have to look through every bag. And I turned back around and it was lying right on top. And I was like, oh, mom took my blush. Okay. That was one thing. But the more significant thing was, a year after she died, I was with her when she died. I tried to stay awake at night to sort of honor that anniversary. And I kind of woke up, fell back asleep, and then my cat jumped on my leg. And right when the cat jumped on my leg, I went, I know it's the exact minute she died. And I grabbed my phone. It lasted a full minute. So my cat sort of jumped on me. I was like, oh, I think that was my mom. But you know, like I said, I'm a skeptic, so I don't know. But those were my experiences. And, you know, and
but stay like that. Stay like that, Jennifer. It's really important for anybody that's listening to this. You know, one of the things that I love is for people to be open to the subject matter, as I became open to the subject matter, because it allows you to grow and evolve within your own energy and spirit. But I'm also really realistic. I am a New Yorker, right? My dad was a New York City officer, and I grew up with comments like, you know, him saying stuff like, so tell me, why is it that whenever a psychic works with the police, they always seem to say that the body is going to be found by water. If the planet's 90% water, it's kind of stacking the odds in the psychic's favor. No. So for me, my entire life doing readings has been having that voice in my head. Right. And I've translated that to, if anybody ever watched me live, I always announce it. I'll say, in every event that I do, I imagine right over here behind me are the two old guys from the Muppets, Waldorf and Statler. And if those people, you know, if you're too young to remember the Muppet Show, you know, the two crotchety old puppets that are literally cranky and curmudgeon-y and literally nitpicking over everything that's happening that's festive and fun, you know, with, you know, Kermit and Miss Piggy. Yeah. But the reality is,
it's me and Jessica. Jessica, it's us.
Like, I know that exists. Anyway. And I read to that, right? So I don't like fluffy, new agey, you know, peace, light, and love kind of messages. I need factuality.
Oh, that's great.
How do you handle your naysayers, though? Like, in other words, has it gotten to the point where it's really quite harassing and threatening to you? And how do you handle that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to, I guess because I came into this in that way, I have more of a tolerance of understanding where somebody's coming from. You know, like I kind of go like, well, I get it.
That makes sense.
They don't have the knowledge. They don't have the experience. So they're coming from a place of being, you know, uninformed. Oh. That uninformed energy can sometimes become ignorance, where someone chooses not to become informed. So I'm less tolerant where people come at me in an ignorant kind of way, but I don't also feel like I have to defend it. So for me, when somebody goes, I don't believe you, I go, okay. Like, it doesn't change me. Like, I don't really care. But if somebody comes at me in a threatening way, that's different. Mm. You know, like, I've had circumstances where, you know, I've had my butt handed to me on a platter because of how a reaction would have been like. For example, I was doing a nighttime radio show many years ago, and I knew the DJ Ken for years, and it was a show called, I believe, The Edge of Reality. And as I'm on the show, I start doing a reading for a woman, and I remember getting some abstract, weird information. I think it was about somebody drowning in a river or whatever. And the girl was like, No, I have no idea. Right. And I'm like in the middle of this reading. And then all of a sudden this other male's voice comes out of like nowhere. And I'm in the studio with the DJ, and it's this like big gotcha moment, you know, where like, aha. And I was like, who the hell is talking? And I'm thinking it's a producer. And then I looked at the DJ and he had this look like, I'm sorry. And I'm like, what? And he had booked the Amazing Randy, who is the Skeptical Society, like, you know, king, right? He had the $1 million challenge and he booked him on the same show and he billed it. Now, maybe if I would have paid attention to the show I was doing, I would know this, but I didn't. The ultimate psychic meets the ultimate skeptic, and he had him on. So long story short, made me look like an absolute idiot. The reading was over. Ken had me come back the following week because the girl called him back and said, I just want you to know everything he said was accurate. I was able to validate it. So he had me come back the next week and to redeem the, you know, the last show. And he goes, see, I wanted everybody listening. I wanted them to know this is what happened last week. Played it. Here's what happened now. And there's like, you know, like a redemption story. And I said, yes, I go for the people who are hearing this. I said, but for the people who didn't tune in last week from last week, which is fine. I go, but it's a way of teaching. So I always have felt that as long as people are coming from it in a way that's allowing someone else's beliefs, but not interfering with like attacking, I guess that's the best I could say it. Like not down for the attack, and it gets very personal. Like there'll be a vitriolic type of thing. Like I have an entire episode of South Park dedicated to me. I mean, you are interviewing right now the biggest douche in the universe. Just let's be clear. Like, I don't know. Okay. I don't know how many South Park guests you've
You're
had.
You're the only one.
A whole episode.
I mean, so, I'm quite thrilled about it. That you, yeah. I mean, and yeah, I guess it's kind of we as people who have our names and faces out there publicly. I mean, I can't tell you how much shit I have to deal with on any social media of the trolls or people who follow. So I can't possibly imagine what you have gone through within your career over the years in all the different types of mediums that you've been on. Like even before there was a social media, radio shows.
Mediums. Oh, God, do you see what you
That's a double entendre, you Jen. You're welcome. I'm smart.
Sorry.
I went to college.
The double entendre. Yeah, I know. It's smart.
I went to college, but no, it's like, that's the thing. People are just mean to be mean these days. And I think what you said was very poignant about people who are not willing to learn. That's on them. So I guess now that we've sort of covered so much, I do want to get back to this whole when you talked about beginning all of this and your mom sort of, you had this role reversal where you used to go to work with her and then she would come to work with you, which I love.
Yep.
How did you
not with me? She would just
show up. Oh God. She's my mother would do that too.
That's me, son.
So you had your own bring your mom and son to work day, but, how did you first start your reading? Sort of, how did you get into the world? I mean, you talked about fairs. Is that something that you stumble upon? Do you have to know somebody who knows somebody? And
so I had, I like a lot of backup, right? So I like a lot of like validation. And that's just who I am as a person. So after I had that one reading with this woman, Lydia Clark, my mom had been going to psychic fair. She came back with a whole bunch of business cards. And I go, what are these? And she goes, these are other psychics. And I go, well, can I go to one of them to see? And she said, well, let me vet them out. So I make sure, cause I was 15. She's like, let me vet them out and make sure that, you know, they pass my test. And I was like, your test? I'm like, you're like a psychic junkie. What test is that? But she, you know, pulled a few people and I went to another woman and she read runes. She did something called rune casting. And I was like, what's a rune? And it's just like Nordic Viking symbolism. And then she would drop them on like this cloth and then she would like read. And she launched into pretty similar things that Lydia had said. And she said, do you know how psychic you are? And I like looked at her and now, because it was so early on in the reading, I didn't go to the place of, oh my God, amazing validation. I went, oh, I get it. This is like a thing. Like, so now when do they pull me in? Like, where's the class I have to take? Where's the, you know, what is the thing that I have to do? Like, that's how I think. Like, okay, what do they want from me? And she looked at me and she's like, there is no class. She goes, it's your journey. She goes, you have to discover, you know, your own abilities and develop on that level. And I'm like, so you're not offering to teach me? And she's like, no, I'm just telling you. And then she got up from the reading and went and called somebody in the middle of the reading, which I thought was extremely unprofessional. Like she got up and like went to the phone And she called this woman and she said, I have a gentleman that I'm reading right now. He needs to come and work for you. And I was like, what? And she called the woman that ran the psychic fairs. And I was like, how do you even know that I didn't even confirm for you. And she goes, do you not work with cards? Now I do. Working with tarot cards and different decks of cards were my first love. And I had pulled up an affinity for it right after my first reading with Lydia. I just kind of like, she used cards. So I wanted to learn more about the cards. And I was like playing around with my cousins. I would like do the card layout. And I would open the little book that comes with it.
Yes, I have.
I would read what it said. And then I would add my own thoughts into it. And then very shortly
after did you ever mess with your cousins? Did you ever say like hangman reverse, sorry, or whatever? Like, I don't know if that's a bad card, but like the worst cards. Okay.
Nope.
There are no worst cards, right?
Yeah, I was, the tower's a pretty bad one. Tower's a pretty heavy one. But I would read from my cousins and then they would ask me if they could bring their friends. Like, so I was already doing some readings. So that when this woman picked this up and said, come to the psychic fair, I was like, okay. And then my mom's like, you have to go. And I was like, I went. And I did my first psychic fair. So it was kind of like this, just it, like an ice cube tray. Like it just filled like one tray after the other, one, you know, cube.
Wow. I guess that's how you know it's meant to be, when things fall into place that way. So now.
But my background's in public health and healthcare administration. Wow. I'm a few credits short of a master's in that.
We need you. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. Get to work. We need you,
John,
right now,
the vaccine, John. John, the vaccine. Wow.
Yeah, this was never going to be my career. Like, it was like every time my wife would say to me, like, I'm not going to do reading for a living. I'm like, no. I go, if I want to not read someone because I don't like their energy, which happens a lot, I'll just be like, no, I'm not the right person for you. Like, here's somebody else, you know. But if it's your job, you can't do that.
Yeah. Well, when you meet somebody and you just said like, I don't think I'm the right person for you, how do you figure that out for yourself? Is it just?
It's a feeling. And then it couples with how they'll respond.
Okay.
Like if I give information to somebody and they're like, yeah, I don't really, you know, I don't really know what that is. I'm good. I'll say, write that down. But if I say blah, 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 and they're like, yeah, oh, I wish I could help you. That's not ringing any bell. No, I have no time for you. Like that to me is like, I have to now tap dance for you. And I'm not that ambitious. So it's like, if I have to do this, I kind of have to want to do it for you. And if somebody gives me the energy, like I had somebody who was on my waiting list for, I want to say it was about 7 years.
What?
Yeah. She came and she sat in front of me and literally gave me an attitude. And I think I was 3 minutes into the reading. I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm the right person for you. And she looked at me and she went, I've been on your waiting list. No, I've been waiting for this for like 7 years. And I looked at her, I was like, well, you should start acting like you've been waiting this for 7 years because I don't have to read you.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity. It's up to you if you want to take it or not. And then it turned out positive. Mm-hmm. But it was like, sometimes you have to break through a person's energy, which by the way, is their grief, is their skepticism, is their vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And that I respect, right? So for me, I know that it's got to be validated, but you got to give the person the opportunity as the medium to do their job, right? And if you only wanted to hear from one person, right? Let's say, Jessica, you only wanted to hear from your aunt that passed, but three other people that you weren't expecting to hear from shows up, you're now going to be disappointed, which is why I won't read journalists. Because if I read for who's a journalist, who I think should be objective, if I read for the journalist and they want to hear from dad and I connect with dad, that's going to be a great piece. If I read for them and they don't hear from dad and I hear from four other people that they don't want to hear from, now I suck.
See, I find it to be the opposite. Yeah. Any healing experience or medium experience, and I I believe that my mother has seen you live, John. Please shout out Patty Vasquez.
Okay.
Hi, Ma. So my mother I grew up with a mother who traveled all over to see who she believed were the best psychics and mediums, etc. So I've always thought when I've gotten readings that if I didn't get visited by who was on my mind at the time and was visited by other people, I think that's a great thing. I don't know. I find that to be a surprise. I don't know. I
do too. Like, I think it's interesting. And again, part of my journey was when I got angry when my mom passed, I stopped reading.
Whoa.
Like, stopped reading. Let's see. She passed in October. I want to say it was a few months where And I had, at that time, while I was in college, I was working at a video store. And for the young people that are listening to this, that would be like Netflix in a building, you know, it's like Netflix, but you go into a building, right?
Blockbuster, RIP.
It was pre-Blockbuster for me.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yep.
This episode is brought to you by our best friends at Spindrift. Yes, you heard me. Best friends. For those who know us, you know how addicted we are to true crime and sparkling water. Cue the day when we were both starring in Broadway shows and stumbled upon the Holy Grail, Spindrift.
America's first sparkling water with real squeezed fruit. Yep, that's it. 11 flavors with no worries about any chemicals going into your body. You'll have a crush on all flavors, trust us.
Oh, and they make the perfect mixer for your holiday bevvies too.
Ugh, the possibilities are endless. Just go now to drinkspindrift.com, find your match, and use our sassy sparkling code KILLIT20 at checkout and get 20% off your first order. Self-care, baby. After all, it's necessary in 2020.
So I was at the day, I was working a day shift, and a woman came in and she said, I need your help. And she knew that I did readings because she had saw me at the psychic fairs. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And she said, no, my brother-in-law is missing. She's like, I need your help. And she grabbed my hands and she's like, please help me. And I was like, I'm sorry. I go, I don't really do that any longer. I said, but maybe you can find somebody else that can help you.
Oh.
And I walked out of the, I went to the back of the store until she left because I just wasn't dealing with that. And I was in a very dark, down place. And then I went home and it was about 5:30 at night. My neighbor called me and I was like, yeah, what do you need? She goes, just come next door. So I walked into her house and it was her and her mom. And she was a few years older than I was. And she had a fluorescent orange like raincoat and she threw it at me and she goes, here, tell me what you get. And she knew that I did readings too. And I like grabbed, I held it and I like looked at her and I just had this like I don't want to play as my boyfriend cheating me. Like I didn't want to play that game. And then all of a sudden I was like, this guy's missing. Oh. Who is this? And her mom was like, whoa. And she turned to her mom. She's like, I told you he can really do this. She goes, I keep going. So I got a whole bunch of information that was about, anyway, he had gone out in a boat and he was going to be found with this woman who was not his wife, got her name, got all this other stuff. And they said, would you tell his wife? So I'm like, yeah, sure. So I get on the phone with his wife and I was very, unfortunately calculated and cold with how I delivered what I got, which I feel embarrassed about now, but I was in a very dark place back then. And then after I was done, I was like, anything else? Like, I felt like, okay, party trick is over. Balloon animals are done. Can I go home? So I left and then they called me back about, I want to say it was like a few days later, or a week later, everything that I had said happened the way that I said it. Mm-hmm. And the wife wanted to talk to me. So I got on the phone with her and I was like, yeah. And she's like, I just want you to know that I hated you for a couple of days and I hated what you said. But I wanted to thank you now.
Oh.
And I was like, thank me. And she goes, yeah, I wanted to thank you. She goes, because in that dark moment, the only bright spot that I actually got was the truth coming from you. And although I didn't want it to be true, it was. And I want to just thank you because you helped me.
Oh.
And then this is what rocked my world. She said, I just want you to know that if in your lifetime you helped one person with your ability, it was me. And that, okay. You remember what I said, right?
For everybody listening, we like to do this because this is not on video. For everyone listening right now, Jen and I, the Muppets, we absolutely just raised our hands and Jen now has her hands on her temples because this is now a sign. That's all, right?
Yeah, it was a powerful moment for me. And like they looked at me and I couldn't speak. And when I get upset, my voice goes away. I kind of sound like Mike Myers doing Linda Richmond coffee talk. Like I literally get all verklempt. Like I can't talk. So I just like looked at them and I ran next door. Like because I knew I was going to get emotional and I didn't want to do it in front of people. So it just hit me in such a way because nobody knew that my mom would say that to me all the time. Most of the time she said it, we were in a car.
Oh.
It was a pretty powerful gut punch emotional moment. And then I felt like an ass. And then like all these emotions came flooding out and then the phone rang and I thought it was my neighbor checking on me. So I answered the phone and I'm like, hello. And she's like, hi. And I'm like, who is this? And she says, don't hang up. And I'm like, who is this? And she goes, my name is whoever. She goes, you're supposed to be coming to my house on Saturday night at 7:30 for a group. She said, but I've heard through the grapevine, you've canceled all your private appointments. You've canceled all your groups. She's like, but you didn't cancel me. And I'm like, I grab my appointment book and I look, I had nothing in my book. And I like looked and I go, I don't even have you in my book. And then I just like, this poor woman, I unloaded on her. Like, I don't even know if I could do this anymore. And then my mom passed and I went through all this like stuff. And then she said, okay, sweetie. She's like, why don't we do this? I got people coming at like 8. Why don't you come at 7? She goes, you come, we'll sit. If it feels good, she goes, and it's okay with you, you could read for me. If not, I'll just have coffee and cake with them. She goes, they don't have to know. I'll just say you canceled, you couldn't make it. That's how I got back into this. Whoever that woman was who mm-hmm. called to confirm her appointment, mm-hmm. thank you to her, because she got me back into doing this, because it was almost like I lost my balance emotionally and the universe reached out and caught me.
Wow.
And that to me is something that I think all of us, anybody that's listening to this, I want you to know that it's not because I'm a medium that I had that moment. I think the universe does it for all of us if we allow ourselves to be caught, which means if you allow yourself to energetically be a participant in the world that you're living in and you recognize that you're just one small aspect of it, there are other things that are happening around us. You know, David Friedman, who's a composer, wrote a beautiful song mm-hmm. called Help Is On The Way. And I think what's really amazing is that I truly believe that, like, help is on the way, and that there are angels out there that are, you know, working to help us. And I really believe that that woman was, in that moment, used strategically in the universe, because it got me back on path. And then from that, I did a lot of stuff that helped a lot of people mm. when it came to TV and media and books and stuff. And it was that moment, that pivotal moment,
wow.
that missing persons case that did it. Yep.
I'm so grateful that you are talking to us today, and that 5 minutes in, you didn't get bad energy from us. I was like, see you guys, I can't do this interview today. I also am glad, because I don't know if you know, but in our podcast, Jessica and I like to pretend we're experts at everything that we do. So we are in fact now journalists. So full okay. disclosure, we are journalists. So you're interviewing as journalists. We are doctors, right, Jessica? And now I think we're psychic mediums today. Is that right?
I hate to have to say it, but yeah, probably.
It's true.
And but look, what you just said about the universe putting you back on your path, I think a lot of people could use that reminder, because we're in a weird time as it is right yes. now. And I think a lot of people, especially in our business of entertainment, or, you know, really anywhere that has to do with people and feeling people's energy and empathy, people are lacking that right now. And I think it's hard, and the anxiety and depression that comes along with it, it's hard to remember. I always like to say there's a higher power. There's something so much bigger than me. And I'm, you know, it's amazing how small we are, really, on the grand scale and scheme of things. So it's kind of nice to hear and be reminded by someone like you who could easily say, you know, it's because I'm a medium that all of this happened. To hear you say, no, it's because of the universe, and you know, it's because 100%. Of this person, and, yep. and I didn't expect this phone call, and I, as Jessica, would like to call you sometime and be like, John, our appointment that was on Wednesday, is that still happening? And you'd be like, I don't have it, but I will come by. So I just, I guess there's a part of me that, and I think a part of a lot of our listeners, we hold mediums in, I know I do, I can speak for myself, in very high regard when it comes to things like missing persons cases. And I wonder sometimes if you ever, have other people come to you with this since then? Have you had several of these sort of happen within your career span?
So part of my making fun of the subject matter of my own field is that when somebody says, oh my God, I had an amazing reading with fill in the blanks with whoever it is, in my mind, I wait 3 beats. I'm like, and they work with the police. It always came out. It was like, and they work with the police. And I just laughed, because I never ever put out there that I was affiliated in any way with police, or I never put out there, because of my father being a New York City police officer, having mm-hmm. a huge respect for the badge, and for understanding the amount of work that goes into, you know, what they do. I would never want to take away from that. So any cases that I've ever participated in, I always say I solve nothing. Like I can't fix my client's problems. I can't take away my client's grief, but I can give insights and information upon which they could use and build. So that's what I've done in my years of doing this, which is now, I can't believe 36, but 36 years of doing this. I have, you know, been pulled into cases And I am not someone that is sought after by police departments around the world. I have one specific person who came to actually arrest me for fraud, to be honest. I like Jennifer's eyes just like popped right out when I said that. Yeah, he actually was a police officer in Jersey who then became an FBI agent and used to hear me on a local radio station in Manhattan. And he used to get angry that they put me on. He was very upset. So he decided to set up an operation where he was going to,
Aren't there other crimes you're in New Jersey. We have a lot of shit going on out here. Besides being,
well, but his he, turn?
He came. What? Yeah, he came. Yeah, he came.
It became a love story though? Is he, what happened?
It did become a love story. Yes. We've now become friends.
Okay. And
yeah, no, it's been a crazy journey. So he came into my office with another police officer. He had made it into working for the FBI now. Anyway, long story short, he went around the office and asked women in the office for items that belonged to them and put them in evidence bags and brought them with actual evidence for a case that he wanted me to get information on. So like people tests involved in what he was doing. I can't tell the story, but like he tells it really, really well. And he has like all the details that in his mind. I just remember thinking like, he reminded me of my dad. He had that whole cop mentality. So I literally went into like son mode, you know, of like, okay, this is how I have to talk to him. You know, there can't be any color. It's got to be black and white. It has to be like, there's going to be that gotcha moment if you're not careful. And I wound up reading for him. So I got information on the case and then I got information on his family, which was then later validated by his mom and dad. So his mind kind of had to get a little bit blown open to the potential, but because of his career, he would never go on record. So, I said to him, I go, I don't want to be known for that. I go, so please keep my name out of your reports. So it set up a professional barrier for both of us.
Yeah.
And what was kind of exciting and fun is I got a chance to participate in some really cool things where he would call me. And, you know, I remember being in Ireland and literally driving to an event at one of the theaters there, and the phone goes off and the conversation starts off with, there's a missing girl. That's how the conversations would always start. So there's a body, there's a missing girl, there's a this, there's a that. And then he would give me nothing. And then he would let me kind of work on what I was getting. And then, you know, it would take maybe a couple of conversations. And then he developed an understanding in a really cool way on how to use me as if I was a tool. It's almost like he was having a conversation with like my guides, and he like knew how to like not go in the front door, but come in a window. So he would ask like a weird, or maybe that's just part of his job. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I found it interesting because he would like exhaust one way of asking something. And I'd be like, how many times are you gonna ask me the same damn question? Like the answer's not gonna change. Right. And then next thing you know, he went in like a back door and then got me to get information in a different way. It was kind of cool to explore, but it's not something that I did publicly or actually really, you know, talked about, but he's actually writing a book about it. So,
wow.
I have a question too. You brought up TV and film a couple of times, and I would ask you, what do you wish the public knew that TV and film might not fully portray?
Okay. If we weren't in a COVID world right now, I would hug and kiss you.
My God,
Jessica, could you leave the meeting, please?
I don't know why you have to make me. Jeez. I'm already have enough competition in my life. God damn it.
I absolutely hate the way the world of this has been portrayed because it's always the stereotypical, we need to have this moment happen in the storyline. Let's let the psychic take care of that. And I'm like, it doesn't really help people when it's sensationalized. Like I'm not a fan of, you know, ghost hunting shows and paranormal investigations and all of that. And although I believe that there's, you know, residual energy and places could have energy that's there, I don't want to watch anything that's going to celebrate or glamorize or glorify dark energy or scare people. So if you watch something that's about like hunting ghosts and paranormal investigation and they shoot it in that black and white Blair Witch style, and there's the orb that comes floating through, and then it's the reactions that people have, it doesn't give people a sense of, oh my God, my dad's okay. You know, it makes you afraid to pee at 3:00 in the morning. So like that to me is not helpful. where I do like stuff is like how the movie Ghost did it.
Mm.
You know, the way the movie Ghost did it, they also sensationalized it in a movie kind of way. However, the teaching of the love that you have with you, you take it with you. So I was better with that than I was, let's say, The Sixth Sense, right? So anything that comes at it in a scary way, I don't really love. I don't like the reality show take on the subject matter. I'm kind of boring when it comes to doing the work. I don't like seeing it. I never liked seeing it as entertainment. Matter of fact, when people would say, oh, I find your show so entertaining, I never took that as a compliment. To me, educational, empowering, enlightening, that I'll take. Entertaining for me is not a compliment. So when somebody at the end of an event would come up to me like, oh, I found this so entertaining, I'd be like, thank you. But I didn't leave there going, yay. Because entertainment is not what I see this as.
Oh, I love that you said that, because in fact, us getting into the discussions about true crime or missing persons cases or cold case files, we always said, you know, it's very easy to sensationalize and make something really sexy for somebody to want to listen to it and hear about somebody else's tragic experience. But for us, we didn't want to make the focus of that the reason why we do this. It's we love the fact of things being educational. I don't mean to speak for you, Jen, but I am educational, or, you know, for us to think about something from a psychological or sociological standpoint versus page six of, you know, somebody got chopped up and that's why we're having this conversation. We try it. There's a fine line, I think, of like making something sensationalized and preying on that versus being very real and respectful. So I actually am not surprised that you feel that way in your field, because it's very easy to make it seem really sexy and have a reality television show. And, you know, when you're,
and there's not a lot of people to call out in my field. So, you know, and I'm always the person, I don't really care if somebody's famous or popular in the field. And if I'm going to go against that, I'm going to be like, this is my experience. This is my truth. You know, I've been doing this since I'm 15. And an astrologer, you know, a couple of years ago said to me, you know, you're moving out of your Harry Potter years and you're moving into your Dumbledore years. And I remember like standing there going like, did you just call me old? Like to my face, like, is that where we're going? I'm like, because, and he said to me, he goes, well, it's true. He goes, you've been doing this for how many decades? I was like, four. And he goes, well, he goes, you have a voice. And, you know, when he pointed that out, I kind of thought like, you know what? I am doing this a long time and it's okay for me to actually voice an opinion about the subject matter. I might not critique a person because that's their karma and what they do, but like from a subject matter and from a teaching standpoint, and I would assume the same thing with you guys, right? From a singing standpoint, you know, if you hear somebody singing and everybody goes, oh my God, they've got the most amazing voice popular, but you're hearing it and you're thinking like, oh my God, they're not going to be able to sing in 5 years because they're screaming right now.
Yes.
Right. So, and that's how I feel. Like I've watched over the four decades, I've watched more people go up the mountain of success and fame and then drop off and then they're gone. And I was like, I've been doing this for four decades for a reason.
Well, like, I always love to say, like, especially doing large roles where you can absolutely burn out very quickly after 8 shows a week, especially vocally. I always have said, you know, to anybody who's listened or wanted to listen, it is absolutely a marathon and not a sprint. And it's very athletic. And if you think about it, it's only, I want to get to this point so fast, you're going to not have a career afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I totally agree with that of like, okay, it's happening. And then they just dropped off because they completely burned out.
So ego.
Yeah. Brett and I were
beyond
ego.
Yes.
My husband and I were talking just this morning and he said, slow and steady is the way to build something. And it's more lasting that way, as opposed to a fire that burns out quickly. And, I think that's good advice for life.
Yeah. And I think anywhere, like, you know, no matter when somebody has an ability, right? If that ability is singing, dancing, acting, painting, sketching, sewing, doing readings, right? If they're psychic, there's ego involved. And I think keeping I call it the monster, you know, keeping the inner monster at bay is really, really important, because I think we need what I call it shot glass ego. If you have a shot glass worth of ego, it gives you the courage and the boldness to do what it is that you feel you can do. Anything more than a shot glass, if you try to fill that shot glass with a gallon of ego, makes a mess. It spills everywhere. So I think it's really important to have that shot glass ego. You have to have some ego, right? So you have the ego to give you the, you know, the strength to do something.
Yep.
But then you have to be aware that if too much ego, that inner monster can kind of, that beast wants to continue to be fed, come to drug. And then people, you know, in my field, they think that they are infallible. They can't be wrong. And then they don't do this. And this is what's in front of me all the time when I'm reading. They don't trust.
Hmm. Wow.
So for me, it's all about trusting the information. And it's hard. Like if you're actually in front of 1,000 people and you're giving information to somebody and they're going, no, but you know what you're getting is accurate for them, but they're being difficult, whatever the case is. You can look foolish for a bit.
Sure.
Until you have that breakthrough moment. So you have to have enough ego to say, no, I'm pretty positive this is the reason, and then back it up and trust that rather than, you know, go to the 25 other hands, because in a room full of 100 people, in a room full of 30 people, every psychic could be 100%. They could look 100% right.
Mm.
Because there's always going to be somebody who's like, oh, that's for me. That's for me. And you have to be confident enough to be like, no, it's not. It's for them. And it's just a matter of them like hearing what I have to say. And I've had people be more annoyed for me because I won't let it be for them. And I won't go like, oh yeah. That's it. Cause it's not. So I can't.
Mm-hmm. For our listeners, John held up a rune or a rock. What would you call it? That said trust on it. Just a rock that said trust. Do you have rocks with Jessica and my name in front of you right now? And would you like one?
I would love one.
We can send
you
stat. If anybody wants that new merch, we can make some rocks with our names on it.
Great.
But truly, like, John, I was so excited that you said yes to coming and talking to us today. You have no idea. I'm such a fan of yours for what it is that you do and people who you've helped. We cannot express more gratitude. If we could through a Zoom screen, we would.
Absolutely.
But you're really just an incredible human being. And thank you for sharing your time with all of us.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me. And how could I not come on a podcast where somebody played a witch and a gambling nun?
Well, we've been sort of Twitter friends since that time, that gambling time. And I echo Jessica's sentiment, and we're just very grateful because time is almost more valuable than money these days. And we really appreciate you coming here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And if, you know, if you want to sing at any time with us, you can. I know that.
That's my daughter. I throw her in. She's my stunt singer.
Oh, we love that.
Oh, yes.
We love that. Okay.
We love a singing.
Good to know.
Girl.
Good to know for our karaoke journey.
Yeah, she's my little actress.
Can we know her first name? Is that allowed here?
Yeah, her name is Olivia. She's Olivia Edward.
Olivia.
And she plays Duke on Better Things.
That is awesome.
Everyone, go check out Olivia Edward as Duke in Better Things.
Better Things.
Yeah, she's on Better Things on FX.
Oh, yep. Better Things on FX. We're going to check it out. Get it, Olivia. If there's a role for like a couple of, you know, balcony old ladies, you know, from the Muppet Show, let us know. Jessica and I would love to co-star.
We will self-tape. We'll self-tape.
Mm-hmm. We'll self-tape for you. Yeah. All right.
So do you guys ever like sing on your podcast or?
We haven't yet. We do.
With Patreon page.
We have a Patreon page where we do like little karaoke things for people who subscribe. So we've done,
once a month.
We do it once a month.
And have you guys like breached into the TikTok world yet? Or
I am not on TikTok, but my name has been on TikTok 6 million times. I don't, as in people who've posted things about me or clips of me. I'm a little nervous of the TikTok world. Because I don't know. I'm this close to hiring a social media team to help me with the TikTok world because they're very much more inclined and smart about it. But everybody's doing it. Although my mother did text me the other day and she was like, get off TikTok. I said, Ma, I'm not on TikTok. And she said, get off it. And I said, Mom, I'm not on.
Okay.
So
I'm actually being called right now by the agent I was telling you about.
Go.
Oh, go. Bye.
Go.
No joke. Put him on speaker. So there's a body.
Right. Oh, hilarious.
Well, please. Yes. All right. Thank you so much, John. Get out of here.
You guys. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
We'll talk soon.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
He sounded great. I will tell you that when John was like, someone's calling, I was like, is it a dead person from my family? Like,
is it a dead body? Who's calling you?
I thought he was like, someone's calling me from your past. And I was going to be like, is it an ex? Is it a, you know, like, who could it? It's not for us.
He dated that woman he dated as, I guess, as a teenager, the person he was involved with. Who was two-timing him. He was two-timing him, I think.
Right. And now you're always going to remember that. You're always going to, you're always going to be the one who's like, wow, look what happened to John. And I ruined his life in that moment. He got past it, obviously. But
You know what I'm obsessed with for our fans right now? I love that I'm giving you this is a fresh face, and Ms. V has given you a full brow and a thick liquid liner.
I have to go get a cocoa test.
Why are you wearing makeup for a coronavirus? As they shove it up your nose, the liner's going to run.
Well, I don't know. I just always, I feel like I have to do a recording today for a Christmas video. So I put on a little bit of makeup because I got to record, I forget what Christmas song, because that's where my brain is at today. And I want you to know though, like I haven't showered. Like all I did was just like, foo-foo do a little brow sitch and a little bit of the cheapest liquid liner. People ask all the time, like, where do you get your liquid liner? And I'm not kidding you. And I tell you, it's like NYX. It's like 99 cents. I'm a cheap ass from New Jersey.
What a ringing endorsement. Let's try to get them as a sponsor. Listen, we're cheap asses and we like your product.
Your product is cheap. Will you sponsor us?
Will you sponsor us?
Great. I really enjoyed that conversation with John.
Wild, right? Fucking wild.
Like literally wild. I literally wild. As somebody who would see a healer or medium at any chance. If you were going to tell me that, I would be there. This was particularly cool.
I did call Melanie Moore, hooked me up with one. But I have to say, I was probably the latter person he described about someone he doesn't want to work with in that phone call. Because I think my whole energy was like, why don't you prove it to me? Why don't you go ahead and prove it?
Yeah, we're going to call we're going to call it a closed off energy. We're going to call it.
Yeah.
We're going to call it a skeptical closed off moment.
Yeah. You know, and so.
Well, I went to a live show of the Long Island Medium, I'll have you know.
And
I was very underwhelmed. Because I also, there was a moment in my life where I had watched her show, and there's something to what John said about sort of sensationalizing things. And she's just like a larger than life personality anyway. But, I mean, I had gone because a couple of castmates of mine at the time were like, the Long Island Medium is at the Beacon. And I was like, get out of here. So I had to go. And I was, I don't mean to say like she doesn't have any ability. I'm sure she does, but it was too like, I don't know. I prefer to be on somebody's waiting list and have them come to my home or have a, you know, a Zoom. Yeah. I had one with my healer like last month or 2 months ago. And, you know, over a screen, I'd certainly prefer it in person, but like private and, you know, and like John said, there's always a moment where you're going to be like, I see the number 7 and there's 3,000 people in an audience.
You're going to read into it. You're going to read what you want into it. I responded to what he said about if you are skeptical, it tends to also be just your grief. I know that's what it is for me. You know, next to my husband, my mom was my favorite person. And I, you know, she's still, I'm very protective of that feeling and that memory, right?
Yeah.
Which is why today I was like, do I even share this? It's mine. It's not, I don't know, but I did, right? So fine. But the idea that, I guess what I'm saying is when I say prove it, I don't know that I'd ever be satisfied that my mom actually came to visit me unless I saw a full floating apparition saying, hi, Jennifer, it's mom. You know what I mean?
Like walking across the wall.
Like I'm just that, I think my mind's playing tricks on me or I'm reading into it because it's what I want, you know?
Yes.
Which is why the other day when the makeup thing, I actually was kind of gobsmacked. I remember telling my husband, I was like, Brett, you know that like I'm with you. We're super skeptical, but my eyes didn't play tricks on me. Like, you know, I was like, no, that actually wasn't there.
Look, I think that there's merit in being a skeptic. I think like being a realist, anyone that I have in my life, who I would consider a close friend, or those who I'm close with, I think they're completely balanced with dreamer and realism. And I think that I particularly love that because I know, girl. Jen just pointed to herself like, that's me. And it's true. Like, it's really effing true because I think that there has to be skepticism. Instead, you know, I love a glass half full kind of person. And I love like a rose colored lens. I don't happen to be that way. Like my lens could have a little crack in it.
Yeah. I'm a realist. Like that line is, it's
like,
not,
I don't clean my glasses. Yeah, exactly.
I don't like to wash my glasses. Just ask my husband. He will rewash my glasses that I wash.
That's
feels
nice.
Really great.
My dog will not do that for me. He doesn't have the ability. And that's why also I'm looking for a husband. We don't have to even be married. Like when the cocoa is over, I guess my point of this is like, and I wish that John was here to be able to tell me what's going to happen, but I could, you know, if somebody wants to apply for this job, like of just, you know, cleaning up some things, like doing some, you know, MacGyver shit with me around the house, you know what I mean? Like we don't need to actually be married.
Nelson would do it. My cat Nelson, we grilled last night for dinner or lunch. Ooh. And usually we very diligent about cleaning everything. And my husband's, you know, he cleaned the grill, but he left the utensils, both the brush and the spatula, hanging off the grill, and he didn't clean them. So we let the cat out this morning. I look outside. He's just.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Fred's great at that too. If it were to come to a dish situation, naturally Fred is inclined to eat everything. As we all know, Fred Vosk gets into the garbage.
I love the picture of him under the covers last night. Wait. I didn't know that happened every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just doesn't move. And I have a conversation with him about it. I'm like, are you feeling warm under there? Like, are you feeling pretty comfortable and safe under there? Is that a nice situation for you? Because somehow I think that you're human. And that's been our 2020. It's been our 2020.
And on that note.
As always. We absolutely love you, killers. Thank you so much for listening, for being fans, and for adding your own information via our social media in every way. And until next time, keep killing it.
Don't kill anyone.
Killers, go to our Patreon page and join us to get exclusive bonus content. And follow us on Instagram at Killing It on Broadway and Twitter at Killing It on BWIC.
Subscribe to us for free wherever you download your podcasts.
And go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and lovely review. It'll be good for you.
Killing It on Broadway is a production of Killing It on Broadway, LLC.
Music by Mary Mitchell Campbell. Orchestrations, Benedict Braxton Smith.
Edited and engineered by Smokey.
Morale officers, Fred and Nelson. Say goodbye, Fred.
Say goodbye, Nelson.